Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe live, SEC Media Days, Digital Drive, Radio Row, all of our coverage presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. We appreciate Commissioner Greg Sankey for joining us in the last segment. We'll react to some of the things that he had to say. But right now, we talk to Mr. College Football. One of our favorites, Tony Barnhart, has been nice enough to join us. Tony, how the heck are you?
I am doing great, guys. Another SEC season. Talking about football, I'm having a blast.
Yeah, beats working, right?
It's not beats working for a living. Like my wife said, it's not like you got a real job or anything like that. So, man.
So this is, we were just kind of discussing this, but 50 years yep. Of covering the SEC, this is, I guess, your last year working, as you put it, but I have a feeling we might see you around from time to time.
Well, my wife, I'm going to do a memory tour of the SEC and gather memories for a book that I'm working on. And I told my wife, she wants to call it the farewell tour. I said, darling, I'm not dying. Okay. I'm just stepping away from the daily grind of the last 50 years to do some things I want to do. And I'm excited about it. But yeah, Mrs. Barnhart's got big plans for me. So.
And I know that obviously the Dodd Trophy is something that mm-hmm. is near and dear to you, and that is the watch list out yet? Or
the watch list is out, and all the usual suspects yep. are on it. Thanks for asking about the Dodd Award. This is my 15th year on the board of directors of the Bobby Dodd Foundation. Coach Bobby Dodd, the great legendary coach at Georgia Tech, and you know, the award, there's a lot of great national Coach of the Year awards, a lot of them out there. But the Dodd Trophy is different in the respect that it takes into account not only winning, but it takes into account community service, academics, and all, you know, what do you do? What do the players do? What do the coaches do in the community? And, well, I'll give you an example. We sat down to pick our winner this year, and we've got tons of metrics and all this, it's great. But we ended up picking Marcus Freeman, the head football coach at Notre yeah. Dame, and just what an impressive guy he is, and it was a great choice. The other thing that makes the award different is, you know, we don't have a banquet in Atlanta and get you to come to Atlanta and give you the award. No, we go to you, and yeah. so we took a 15-person delegation to Notre Dame, had an event there, and it was special. So. The Dodd Trophy, it's a lot more than wins, losses. It's about scholarship, leadership, integrity are the three pillars of the award. And I get asked to do a lot of this stuff, and this is one of the few I lend my name to, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
We're talking to Tony Barnhart. Where did Mr. College Football moniker come from?
I can take absolutely no credit for that whatsoever. This is in the 80s when I went to work for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We didn't have internet. We certainly didn't have a website.
Right.
They started building the website for the AJC, and the editor who was building it come to me and says, "Hey, Tony, we're getting ready to start our online product, and we want you to write a blog." I said, "Man, that's great. What's a blog?" And they explained to me what it was. I said, "Oh, I get it. You want me to write something online to get people arguing amongst themselves." They said, "That's exactly it." I said, "I can do that."
Yes.
I said, "As a matter of fact, we're going to give it a name. We're going to call it Mr. College Football." I said, "That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. How cheesy is that?" And they looked at me and said, "Yeah, but cheesy works on the internet."
It does, right?
So, and it started and it caught on. And after 25 years with the AJC, I left. And I said, "I'm sorry, I ain't giving it back."
So, right.
What's funny, he and I were sitting down earlier eating because we like to do that. And I said, "You know, the columnist, the sports columnist, used to be like the most powerful person in a city because of, you know, whatever opinions they would have. And then, you know, sports talk radio kind of started and took off, and people would argue on that. I mean, I guess blogs, it's kind of advanced from that, right?"
Advanced from that. Yeah. We certainly had those in Atlanta, Furman Bisher.
Yeah.
Nothing happened in this town without, from a sports standpoint, nothing happened in this town without Furman Bisher's doing a little check mark. So yeah, it's the blog is what you have a little bit more freedom in a blog, people have always asked me about Mr. College Football, and they said, "What an arrogant thing to do." I said, I don't blame me,
right?
but I am smart enough to know, and I'm not a lawyer, but I did raise one, and I asked my daughter, I said, "Should I keep it?" She said, "Absolutely, Dad. It's you." "Has anybody else ever been Mr. College Football?" I said, Not to my knowledge. He said, well, you're taking it with you. So
that's great. When Chase and I talked about the guest, he said, hey, we got Mr. College Football on Wednesday. I was like, Tony Barnhart.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like we had like, who is that?
It's who is that dude?
It's the moniker is so well known, and it's great. And everything that you've done for college football, we love. Let me ask you this. 50 years of doing this, who do you miss? What coach or player do you miss that's no longer here?
Well, he's still here, but he's not coaching, and that would be Steve Spurrier. I tell you, what's your favorite Steve Spurrier story? And I tell him this story. He's working at South Carolina, which is – I was there the day he took the job at South Carolina. I am standing to Pat Dooley, the columnist of the Gainesville Sun in Florida, and he and I are standing next to each other with Spurrier wearing a Gamecock tie and being introduced. And I turned to Dooley. I said, Dooley, I will never, never get over this. This is unbelievable. But when he was at South Carolina, what I would do with Coach Spurrier, I'd occasionally just call him up, see if he'd say anything, just to chat and all that. And I called him like 2 weeks before signing day when he was at South Carolina. And I said, just checking in with you, Coach. How you doing? He said, hey, Tony, I'll tell you what. He said, I am getting ready to do something I never did when I was at Florida. I said, what is that, Coach? He said, I am going to sign some players from the state of Alabama. I said, really? He said, yeah, when I was at Florida, I never could sign a player from Alabama. He said, now, later on, we found out the scholarships that Alabama was given was worth a lot more than our scholarships. And I said, Coach, that's pretty good. Can I write that? He went, yeah, write that. You don't have that now.
No, so. You don't. And he made news this week or last week about the Arch Manning. Well, he's not done anything. And I love it. I love that.
That is great. I just love it. He said, well, if he was so doggone good, wouldn't they put him in? The other guy's a seventh-round draft choice, you know? So I'm going to be – well, as part of my tour, my memory tour – our wives, his wife and my wife, are best buddies.
Wow.
And they are having a reception for us at Spurrier's Gridiron Grill in Gainesville, Florida.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to celebrate 50 years of doing this, and he's going to celebrate 80 years of being on the planet Earth.
Oh, watch him hand you a bill, though, at this point.
I have no doubt about that. I know I'm picking up this check. This is my deal.
Oh, yes. I love it.
Oh, that is fantastic. We're talking to Tony Barnhart. So looking at kind of the now, you've seen this event grow from probably being nothing to, you know, it's 4 days of just go, go, go. Yeah. I don't know what day it is anymore. But what's kind of your take on some of the agendas that the coaches have? You know, Spurrier always had his or Fulmer had his. That hadn't changed. So what's kind of your view of how the coach handles things now?
Well, the coaches are all want to know about scheduling. Okay, because everybody, other than the coaches, everybody would love to go to 9 conference games because who doesn't want more SEC football?
Sure.
Okay, they look back to the COVID year when we had 10 SEC games and people absolutely loved it. Yeah. So I think everybody wants to do that, but the coaches don't want, in their haste to do it and make more money, which is, you know, somebody told me the other day, the answer is money. I don't know what the question is, but the answer is money. And so the coaches don't want to get overscheduled because we're talking about job security. So I think they're keeping their fingers. They use these meetings and the meetings down in Destin. They use the meetings down in Destin this year. They were as outspoken as I've ever heard those guys. They wanted no part of a 9-game conference schedule. They want no part of that. But they would like the format that gives the SEC the best chance to get 5 or 6 teams in, the 5-11 model. They do want that. Commissioner Sankey laid it out for them. So they've still got their agendas, no question.
There's going to be a lot of arguing about that going forward. Tony Barnhart's with us, Mr. College Football. In your 50 years, I love the history of the SEC. I love talking about it, people like you. In your years, who is the one athlete that took your breath away?
In my life, I have called home twice to say, I saw somebody today that I've never seen before. 1980, Herschel Walker. The first time I saw Herschel Walker play in person, I called home. I said, this guy is different.
Nice.
He is special. He's special. The other person I called home for was Michael Jordan. I saw Michael Jordan play as a freshman at North Carolina because I lived in North Carolina at the time and saw him play a complete game, and I said, this guy is different. He is just better than everybody else. But those are two guys that really changed my perspective for good.
Where was the first time you saw Herschel? We were talking the other day with Buck Ballew about Herschel running over Bill Bates in Neyland Stadium, and that kind of put him in that moment. And we saw Herschel. What, do you remember where it was?
Texas A&M. They played the week after they played. They played Tennessee and beat Tennessee in Knoxville. And there was a run there where the Texas A&M defenders had the angle on Herschel and he just ran away from them.
I love that.
I mean, when they got there, Herschel was supposed to be there when they got there, but Herschel was that way. And I remember Buck telling me the story. They're going up and down after Herschel. And also there was a run in that game. We ran over like four people to score. So he had the speed and the power. And Buck tells me the story of him going up and down the sidelines talking to the offense, and they're going, oh, my goodness, what have we got here?
Yes.
And they knew, Buck knew at the time, this guy. Well, Georgia went into the 1980 season knowing that all the pieces were there except running back. They did not have a Georgia-style running back. And they had a bunch of good running backs there. But when Herschel did what he did, they said, this guy can lift us on his back and take us all the way. And that's what happened.
It's funny because you talk about – Chase and I are talking about Alabama's the same way. This year, loaded, they don't know who the quarterback is.
Right.
They figure that out? Oh, baby.
Yeah. I think Alabama's going to have a big bounce back year. I mean, there was no way that Kalen DeBoer was going to come in and this transition was going to be seamless. We all know better than that.
Right.
Whoever followed Nick Saban was going to have – he was going to be holding on for dear life. That's just a fact. And now – second year, he's got his offensive coordinator back in the fold and Ryan Grubb, which is a real big deal. I was on campus and they said, is it really a big deal that he's got Ryan Grubb back as his OC? He said, it's a real, really big deal. And so I think they're going to have got to go to Athens,
yep.
You know, going to have to play an SEC schedule. Florida State is going to be interesting because Florida, talk about a team with their backs to the wall. Florida State, after they fell apart completely after the undefeated season.
Yeah.
So I'm anxious to see how Alabama plays in that game. I think I'm pretty sure they're going to win. But it's going to be – Kalen DeBoer is too good of a football coach to do that. And, oh, by the way, they won 9 games. It wasn't like it was awful.
Right.
You know.
Well, and I think some Bama fans are holding on to the – didn't Saban win, was it? 8 or 9 his first year. So it's like, oh, you know, just let him get comfortable and, you know, then he'll be there.
What's fine.
Tony Barnhart is with us here on the Chasing Big Joe show. How do you view Vanderbilt?
Yeah.
Because they've come a long way from, you know, Woody Ball and all those things in the 90s. And I think Clark Lee, we have seen him do a really nice job by developing this team and obviously getting Diego Pavia.
Clark Lee had the courage to do what very few coaches would do, and that's to look at his roster honestly, dispassionately, and say, we're not good enough. We're not big enough. We're not fast enough. We're not talented enough. So we need to get older. That's number one. And they did that by picking up the right people. We got to do something that makes us dynamic and not predictable in offense. So not only did they go get Diego Pavia, they got his head coach and they got his offensive coordinator, and they all came in together. There's no learning curve whatsoever. That was a big deal. And the fact that he had the courage to mine the transfer portal to get stronger, to get older, he did that. And but the problem is this. It's great that Diego Pavia is coming back. But this year, these defensive coordinators are sitting there with their head coach, and the head coach is telling the defensive coordinator, when we play Vanderbilt, if these guys over here can beat us, we're going to have to live with it. Pavia is not going to beat us. They're going to have to find something else to do, but we're not going to let that guy beat us.
When's the last time you said that about a Vanderbilt quarterback?
Probably never. probably never.
Not even Cutler.
Yeah.
I mean, and Cutler was pretty good. Tony, thanks so much for doing this. Where can people learn more about the Dodd Trophy?
Go to DoddTrophy.com. And just do a search on the Bobby Dodd Coach. It's really the Dodd Trophy, and you'll find all the information there. Scholarship, leadership, integrity. That's what it's built on, and that's why it's so special.
Always enjoy these chats with you. Enjoy the tour and the memory tour, and we look forward to the book.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thank you. Tony Barnhart joining us here on Radio Row at SEC Media Days, presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. We will have more coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. There's all the discussion about what if it were to expand to 16. Now, he liked the four.
Love the four.
But
love it.
I like the 12. I'm cool with 16. But I do think, you know, you got to figure out what is going to be the best format to get the best 16 teams in. There's all this talk about 4-4, 2-2-1, you know, the five conference champions, whatever. Do you think this is one of those things that at the end of the day, whether it's you or the Big Ten or whoever, that you're never going to fully agree on it, but you're going to have to agree to disagree to find the best format? I mean, is that where this is eventually going to go?
The way you presented it was actually one of the better presentations in framing the question, because you have the five conference champion allocation that will exist, whether it's 12, 14, or 16. So there's this way too great emphasis on like 5-11. Well, it's 5 and whatever. So it's 5-7 right now. And we could have stayed at 4. We were the reluctant entity moving into the conversation from 4 to 12. I think 12 was introduced at a really interesting time in college football where it showed the ability teams beyond just 4 to compete at the highest level for a national championship. Ohio State wouldn't have even been in the open.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have had Clemson in. You wouldn't have had SMU in at all. It brought people into the game, if you will, late in the season because they still had a chance. And I think that's healthy. Now, what are the limits around that? And the way you describe it, from the five to then the number to then the how do teams access playoff? How are they selected to the playoff? Those are the decisions.
Yeah.
You know, what's our underlying five conference champion? That's really decided. That's not going to change. Now, what's the number? And how do they access? And that's where it branches off. Is it the automatic qualifier model, like the 4-4-2-1-1? Or is it we want improved selection processes, protocols, to make sure that the best teams are the ones that focus of entry college playoff beyond the five allocation? And that's where our conference ended its discussion.
Commissioner Greg Sankey on our program just a little bit ago and talking about the college football playoff and expansion. You know, it's funny. I will say, for the most part, we've gotten to talk about a lot of on-the-field football. But, you know, the college football playoff, the expansion, I mean, it's a conversation that's not going to go away anytime soon. And you're going to have people on some side of the fence that are like, leave it alone, it should have stayed at four. You're going to have some that say, no, it needs to expand, 16's not enough. Now, if they start talking about like 32, and
I'm out.
That, like, come on now.
I'm out. I'll go watch NAIA football. Yeah. And I'm not kidding. I'm watching now anyway.
But what's D2? What do they do?
There's a playoff. D2's like.
I know, but how many teams?
16? 16, I think so, yes. I don't think there's any buys in that. If I recall, the FCS or 1AA, I still call it. I think they have 24.
Yeah,
right in there. It's way too. By the way, he complimented you. How many questions he gets from people?
Yeah,
he liked.
Well,
I
appreciate that. Thank you.
He lied, but I would not want to have his job.
No,
I mean, because this is now entering a world of the unknown with what's going to happen.
Well. And whether he likes the title or not, he's the most powerful man in college athletics.
By far.
Like, the Big Ten might be number two.
Yeah.
But they're not number one. He has the most, you know, influence of anyone. And he's, you know, he's earned that right. And there's some people that agree with, you know, his stances on certain things. Some that don't. You know, that's fine. That's how kind of how it goes. But
well, he's overseen a conference that's won, I forget when he actually took over, but has won so many national championships, not just in football, basketball, and baseball, but at all levels. And he's overseen all that. And the conference loves him. I mean, they feel like that he's fighting for them every single day. And that's what you want out of your commissioner, is a fight for you and all that. And it's just, I mean, he's just the same question. He's
trying to sell it and all that. It's just that's just not an easy job at all.
At the end of the day, there's the 4-4-2-2-1 that basically says the SEC and the Big Ten get four teams each, the Big 12 and the ACC get two teams, and then there's the one for the group of five. And then the at-large after that, I guess is what it would be. But my thing is, can you not just sit down and put the 16 best teams in?
You know they can't. There's no way they could do it. They'd like
to like,
do that.
I know that, and like his job is to do the best for the SEC and, you know, the Big Ten, and they have their, I'm forgetting his name for a second, but the commissioner there. Like, I get all that. But at the end of the day, the point of a playoff is to have the best teams compete, and then one is the champion.
You know, remember the question last year was like, Ohio State, you know, they probably should be in. They shouldn't. They don't deserve to host a home game, though, and all that.
They didn't.
Then they run the table.
Right. I know. But they didn't. I go back to that because it's not about now, to be, you know, having revisionist history. At the time, Tennessee should have hosted that game. That game should have been in Knoxville.
Well, whether it should have been Knoxville or not, Ohio State would have still beaten the snot out of them.
Probably so.
But I think that is
the argument, you know, one of the arguments that's going to be, you know, that continue. But, you know, my thing is, and I think the 5-11, that is probably the best, you know, the best
sure.
one.
Yeah.
Because then you're going to get five, you're guaranteed the five teams in from the SEC, and then you'll get some at large and whatnot. But
do you like a group of five getting in or no? A lot of people don't. I do. You think they should have their own national championship?
I do.
I disagree. That's fine.
Look, I like it because okay, it feels good, whatever. But we all know they're not going to win. I know they're not going to preach that.
Right.
But they're not. They're not going to win.
Well, and, I mean, you're right. You go back to Cincinnati when they squeaked in and they got pummeled.
And that's why they joined the Big 12, because they knew they needed to be in a tougher conference. The reason I've always said that they should have their own national championship is I kind of look at it like FCS. Like, you know, we're friends with your best friend's the coach at EKU.
Uh-huh.
EKU doesn't deserve to be in the college football playoff. You know, if they ran the table or whatever, they know they couldn't compete. But the fact that they're in a playoff where it's a more even playing field, I think that's good for them. I understand the national stage and everything that comes with that, but, you know.
I think one's good. I think one is fine if a team gets to do that. You know, and that. But that's again,
who
the
was
problem.
It last year? Was
Boise
it Boise?
State. Yeah.
Yeah.
You saw it happen.
Right.
Yeah. And I get it. You know, then Liberty, like 2 years ago, went to the Fiesta Bowl and got punished.
Sure.
But I still like the fact you got the one team. I don't know. I mean, like, you take a 12-0 Louisiana Tech team over a 9-3 Alabama team? I don't. So that's the question. Probably not.
Probably not.
But at the same time, if that's where it's set up, that 12-0 team can get in, then it's in. So there's a lot of questions that come with this that I'm not sure we have any, not only not any answers, Chaser, but no solutions. Because there is a difference, my friend.
There is. Coming up next, very excited about this one. David Cutcliffe, the former Duke coach, Ole Miss, and longtime coach at University of Tennessee, offensive coordinator, was an assistant for both John Majors and Philip Fulmer. We will talk to Coach Cutcliffe coming up next here on Chase and Big Joe live from Radio Row, where all of our coverage is presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs here on 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe live, SEC Media Days. Our coverage continues day number three, presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. And Joe, we are very excited about our next guest because this is someone that I know we both have watched call a lot of games as an offensive coordinator, as a head coach, and worked with a couple of Manning boys as well. Coach David Cutcliffe is here with us. Coach, how are you?
Well, I'm great. Here I am talking to a place in the Middle Tennessee area. Is one of the places I'm most fond of in this world, not just in the United States, and so many great memories in the state of Tennessee and particularly in that area.
So what are you doing now?
I'm working for the Southeastern Conference in football relations. When I retired, I got a call from Commissioner Sankey, and he said, would you consider coming on board in this volatile time to give us some coach insight and have the ability to maybe communicate in and out, back and forth with our coaches? And I said, well, let me think. Then I called him back and I said, fly me down. I want to get a feel for who everybody is there. And when I went down, I was really impressed with the people that he had surrounded himself with. So I've been doing that. This will be the third season. And people say, what do you do? Football. I mean, I make campus visits in the spring, campus visits in the summer, sometimes periodically. Other times I'm going to go to games, but I'm on the phone. I'm texting with coaches. And then I have a part of me that has got enough energy still to stay involved with keeping up with everything that's going on legislatively.
Yeah.
Which means there are hand grenades going off all around you all the time, right?
There's no question there. What was yesterday like to, you know, with your relationship with the Mannings and coaching Peyton, coaching Eli, and now seeing Arch, Cooper's son, come through as the quarterback of Texas? I have to have a feeling that was pretty cool to see.
I loved it. I've had a long relationship with Arch. Cooper would bring him to Duke, and we would sneak a few workouts in. Yeah. And I met with him yesterday morning prior to everything going on, and he was in an awesome spirit. I call it the big two with him, and I've used this with his uncles and other players through the years that are high-profile people. I said, you know the big two? And he said, I do. And the first one of the big two is talk about your teammates. Be the best teammate on the team. Get it away from being centered here. Talk about your teammates. Be the best teammate on the team. The second one is we don't work football. We go play football.
Yeah.
Make sure you're smiling and that you understand you're playing football. And no matter how transactional college football can become, and I'm going to start calling it higher education football because we need a reminder of that.
Yeah.
But no matter what we do in the transactional part of it, these are young people that are still, for the most part, children. Think about yourself at 19, 20, and even 21. And so we definitely need to remind them all the time, you're playing football, man. How cool is that?
Right.
Yeah.
You're getting to play. You don't have to practice. You're getting to practice. There's a lot of young people around that played high school football that would have liked to have continued to play college football.
Right.
Let's not make it transactional only. That makes sense to you too.
Perfect sense. We're here with the great David Cutcliffe here on Radio Row, the Chase and Big Joe Show. I got to ask, you work with Peyton, Eli, Daniel Jones, all these guys. How much did you have to turn down? I mean, I'm sure there's quarterbacks who reached out to you and people all the time. I got to think there's this long list. It's like, hey, I got to do this. I'm sorry I can't help that. Because you're so beloved because of what you did with Peyton and with Eli.
Well, we've had great fortune. I get asked a lot. I'm trying to be more true to my wife than I am football after 40 some odd years of being married in football with her and football. So I turn down a lot of things, and you know, I'm loyal to our people. I have a lot of young men that are coaching in the NFL and collegiately that I'll spend time with them, and we talk about football mechanics and of a quarterback. We talk about the mental mechanics of a quarterback. And it's just so reaching what you have to grasp and do. And then I have a Eli's backup at Ole Miss, who was a walk-on that I put on scholarship. David Morris is in Mobile, Alabama. And look up quarterback country. He's done a phenomenal job of teaching quarterback play all over this country. He's developed a great business. I go down occasionally and spend time with David. He trains people for the draft. He trains high school people, junior high people. Quarterback country is a neat thing. And then Anthony Boone, who was the winningest quarterback in Duke football history, works for David and has a franchise in the Charlotte area. So that's how far-reaching it is. So I get to impact it still in some ways.
I think it's great. Yeah, I'm going to go back real quick. You were telling Arch about be a good teammate. I saw you walk around looking at some of the things around the College Football Hall of Fame. There's a Bo Schembechler wall kind of back there with a quote, and it says, team, 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 like nine things, says just team only. How you talk about that with Arch, and, you know, team, it is important that he knows that, right?
Yes, and I hope that the most wonderful thing about higher education football is the fan base. We're not professional football. We serve as a minor league to professional football. Think about how expensive it would be for the NFL to have a minor league football. There's fan base.
Right.
It would lose money. So I think the respect I have for what the traditions are, I am a traditionalist. I was influenced by Coach Bryant. I was influenced going and sitting. I was a clinic fiend young and listening to Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler. I was fortunate to have a personal relationship with many of the great ones. Good gosh, you know. I had conversations at Tennessee, and your listeners will have to look up who Skeeter Bailey was. Skeeter Bailey was General Nealon's line coach. We had great conversations. He said something to me when I was really young. He was asking me some personal questions, and I had a lot of trauma in my youth. And I told him I got tired of people telling me to, you know, when you get knocked down, you got to get back up. I'm like, yeah, tell me something that's not so obvious. You
know? Right.
And he said, let me tell you what it is. He said, the general, we used to have a saying, nobody won a football game laying on the ground. He said, let me ask you, David, have you ever cooked? And I said, some, yes, sir. He said, you ever get your hand on the eye of a stove that was hot? I said, yes, sir. And he said, how quick did you get it off? Quick as I could. He said, there it is. It's not about getting up. Be the first one up. Treat the ground like a hot stove, boy. You hear what I'm telling you? And I said, yes, sir. So everybody that's ever played or coached with David Cutcliffe knows what hot stove means. Get your butt up off the ground. And I don't care if it's physically on a practice field or a game field or after a game you just got defeated. Hot stove. What a great reminder. Hot stove. So, yeah, I'm a traditionalist because that makes a difference. Those are the lessons that Coach Nealon and Skeeter Bailey and that staff taught young people. And then I had conversations with some successful men in my Tennessee time that had played for the general, and they knew exactly what hot stove.
Hot stove.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, when y'all are feeling down, just say to yourself, hot stove, boom, I'm ready.
Nice.
We're talking to Coach David Cutcliffe here on the Chasing Big Joe show. So I'm curious, you going to Alabama and growing up in Alabama, how did you end up at the University of Tennessee and be there for so long?
Well, it's an interesting story. I had developed a friendship with Coach Fulmer when he was an assistant coach at Vanderbilt.
Yep.
And he was recruiting. He signed one of our kids. I was a head high school coach, doing exactly what I wanted to do because that's what saved my life at 15 was George White and his staff. And so happy. And then Philip went to Tennessee, and then he called me and said, Coach Majors, in that era, college football didn't start quite as early, was going to come to an August practice. So came down and went to an August practice, was supposed to be there 15 minutes, and he stayed the whole practice.
Wow.
And I didn't talk to him because in that era, I was the offensive and defensive coordinator and the head coach. I had four assistants. That's how we ran. And I didn't know what he wanted, so I called the team up and let them go, and then he came over and says, could I see you in your office a minute? Yes, sir. Thought, man, I'm in trouble. And then he said, where'd you learn to coach like that? And I told him my past, and I told him that, you know, at Alabama and how things were done. And I told him you know, that my high school coach was exceptional and, you know, efficiency and all of the things. And Coach Majors was a great practice coach. He was a great strategist of a game because he'd been a single wing tailback and a free safety man. Yeah. He called it a safety man, but he was calling things as a player. But he looked at me and he said, that may be the best high school football practice I've ever seen. He said, I'm going to call you after the season and offer you a job. And I'm in my mind like, yeah, right. You know,
I've never seen
tell me which guy do you want to sign?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And sure enough, Philip called me and said, Coach Majors wants to fly you up and talk to you about a job. So that's how I ended up at Tennessee. It was an interesting trip up. I was single, you know, doing really well. He offered the job. I accepted it without ever asking him what he was going to pay me. And when I got my first check, I went to check with him. I said, excuse me, coach, what length is this for? He said, that's a month. I said, coach, he said, it's not healthy for a young, single SEC assistant football coach to make too much money. So I told him about 2 years later, we're in Miami recruiting, and I'd met my wife-to-be, and I knew I wanted to get married. And I said, coach, I hadn't thanked you properly. He said, what are you in? And I'm driving. And he said, for what? And I said, coach, I am the healthiest assistant football coach in all of college football. But I need a raise. Okay?
Oh, that's great.
But that's how I ended up at Tennessee, and very fortunate to develop the relationship with Coach Fulmer through those years and the other coaches that we worked with. And then, of course, Coach Majors, I'm serious. His methods weren't always the same as I would use, but his attention to detail, his ability to see the field helped me. And I'll say this, because he could be brutal. I was taught by players at Tennessee to put my back to the fence, where I always knew his whereabouts, where he couldn't sneak up on you. And they would always give a signal. They would say, look sharp, look sharp. And as soon as that meant coach was on his way. Man, you're right. Going to coaching hard, boy. Thank you, players. Thank you.
Oh, yes. I tell you one instance that I met Coach Majors when I got recruited. I was at TMI. I came up to Tennessee. It was the game y'all tied Army in 86.
Yes, it wasn't fun.
And we were supposed to meet Coach Majors after the game, and he just came down. Thank you, thank you. I mean, just like walking in a line. I was like, I want to talk to Johnny May. But I understood. I mean, you guys had tied Army, and he was livid.
He was very livid, and I had those moments too. My wife always likes to talk. We went down, you know, I'm calling offense, and we went down to LSU, and we beat them. And in the locker room, man, we're all down. And we didn't play very well on offense. And he came by me, and everybody celebrated, and he says, what the hell are you saying? A victory, coach, you know. He said, the defense won that game. All right. That's the way it is. Well, I think I've got to keep moving, guys.
You do. You do. Thank you so much for stopping by and doing this.
We could
spend hours with you, but thanks so much for doing this.
Appreciate it. We'll talk down the road.
Absolutely. Thanks, coach. Coach David Cutcliffe joining us here from Radio Row. It's all presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. More coming, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, live on Radio Row, SEC Media Days, presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Appreciate them for being on board with us this week. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. They also have two other great locations, Highway 100 in Bellevue, and my favorite, the West Side on Charlotte Pike. Trivia night is tonight.
Oh, okay.
So Phil will have that for you.
Okay, here's a trivia question for you.
Okay.
What Vanderbilt quarterback has set SEC Media Days on fire?
That would be Diego Pavia.
Right. Just walking around, somebody says, are you from Nashville? I said, yeah. He's like, well, what, that Diego Pavia? I'm like, yeah, all right, yeah. I mean, 2 days now, still talking about him. It's crazy, man.
I know. It's awesome. Clay wants to talk about the Vanderbilt Commodores and maybe Diego Pavia. Hello, Clay.
Now, let's good. First of all, good afternoon from Nashville, boys.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Let me get this straight. Do you remember the day when you said, this better not be about Vanderbilt?
I said that because we were in the middle of a Titans discussion.
Yes, yes.
But now it's okay because we're at SEC Media Days.
Big Joe, do you remember back in the day, now we're going to a different channel when you were on with Pogi. You know, Pogi and I have an interesting back and forth. We have, we're friends off the radio. We're he loves to give me a hard time on the radio when he used to be on the radio, right?
Right.
When you were on a show with him, correct?
Correct.
And he calls it poking the bear, so I'm going to poke you today. Is that fair? Is that fair game?
Remember, this is a family show.
I know that. I was serious I was serious about my bet. Vanderbilt versus Tennessee, Neyland Stadium, donuts. I've got Vandy.
Let's do 24, and there's no chance in hell Vanderbilt beats Tennessee and Neyland.
Okay, it's on, pal. So anyway, Dr. Crane and I have cooked something up today, too. This is all pre-planned. Dr. Crane and I have something pre-planned.
Okay.
You guys are in Atlanta. Tomorrow is Friday, so Dr. Crane is getting not these donuts. He's getting a dozen assorted donuts.
Tomorrow's Thursday.
Thursday, Clay.
I'm sorry, on Friday.
Okay.
So, now, but seriously, you know, back to the Vandy thing, the whole key to the season to me is obviously Diego staying healthy, because if Diego gets hurt, all bets are off.
No, you're right. Way, no, and here's the thing, Clay. We've talked to a lot of people about Pavia. It's like, all right, now they got tape on him. Now they know what he can do. LSU, South Carolina, Tennessee did a great job down the stretch of stopping him. Georgia Tech did not. Can you stop him? Can Pavia adapt to what these defenses are going to throw to him? You know, we talked to Tony Barnhart, and we're talking about, hey, everybody else can beat me, but Diego Pavia is not going to beat my football team this year. We're going to stop him. So can he – if Pavia can get around that, this team's ceiling is unbelievable. I just don't know if they have the horses to do all that, Clay. Now, I do have the horses. They can go 7-5, which if they do with that schedule, it's a second – I heard Willie talking earlier. That's the second most difficult schedule in the country in college football. You go 7-5, even 8-4, Clark Lee's coach of the year.
7-5, Vandy will do that, another dozen on that. How about that?
The agreement is, does Vandy beat Tennessee and Neyland? I say no, you say yes.
Chase?
Yes, sir.
You're a Vandy fan. What do you think?
I mean, I like the bet. I think Tennessee, don't worry about the record. Just worry about that game.
I mean, I think they've got a chance. I really do. If Diego is healthy, if Diego goes through the season healthy, I like my team's chances to win 7 games.
Well, you know what, Clay? It's better now than it was a year ago when the unknown was happening. It's like, I don't know about this. Now you know what this football team can do. You've seen what they could do. There's a lot of energy in that program. I think you've got the best tight end in the country, and Eli Stowers over there. You got some good other fill-ins around him. I think this could be a really good football team. We're talking at Vandy at this level for another year, Clay, which we've never done. Since James Franklin in 2012 into 2013. People down here are talking about it, Clay, that around college football every single day are talking about the energy that Clark Lee brings and just what the energy Diego Pavia brings. We've never seen it before.
Well, to that I will say, and this has been said down there, I think, there is no player in Vanderbilt football history that has brought more buzz to our program than Mr. Pavia.
100%
agree with a lot of his, you know, sometimes I think he goes a little too far with his comments, but I love his confidence. I love his swagger. I mean, this guy wants to win, and I'm 100% behind him.
He does. By the way, Greg Pogue just texted Chase and I, and he says he misses you and hope you're doing well.
By the way, Joe, on the way out the door, I fired the butler.
Why?
No more butler.
Why would you do that?
I decided to take the trash out myself.
All right.
Well, good.
Glad you have.
Thank you, Clay.
See you, boys.
Oh, boy. Coming up next, Danny Werfel, the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. And Vols fans, I know you might be going, why are you having him on for? He's doing something really cool and was down here earlier today. You will hear that conversation coming up next in hour number three, Chasing Big Joe, down here on Radio Row, SCC Media Days, presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs, 102.5 The Game.